This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. With another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime, this is Case Closed. Thanks for joining me today. We'll hear first this week from Barry Craig, confidential investigator. His story from August 10th, 1954, titled Death's Bargain Basement. After that, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Shane Bombing Matter. His story from July 14th, 1953.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
People who are in the market for murder should always pay full price. You can't get a cut rate on a killing. All you can get is a cut throat.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. In spring, they say, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love. He doesn't go quite that far with a confidential investigator. He's been around too long. He's seen too much. He waits till it gets to be summer, and then, if he's me, all he does is buy a new tie.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. I need a tie.
Sport, business, or l'amour?
I want to wear it around my collar.
Oh, one of those. Are you going to try to impress anyone, or will it be just to keep your collar button from showing?
I don't wear collar buttons. My shirts are all sewed together at the top.
Must make it difficult to get into them.
No. All I do is shrink my head. Now, look, I'd like a tie.
Well, all right. By the way, is that your friend peeking in at the door?
Friend? Hold on. No, I don't know him.
I'm glad of that.
Why?
Well, it's hard to be sure at this distance, but he looks like the kind of man who...
Who?
Gets his ties at a department store.
No.
Yes.
The cat. The clerk finally parted with a tie. It didn't cost much more than a week's salary. I had it wrapped and left. I walked down Madison Avenue and admired the girls. There were always girls walking on Madison Avenue, and they're always admirable. The little man who'd poked his head into the haberdashery store didn't look at the girls. He was too busy following me. I went into Willie's wagon. Only a very brave man, or a desperate one, would follow me there. He was either brave or desperate. Willie was too busy to bother about customers. He was on the phone worrying about the fifth at Saratoga. I decided to make conversation. Hey, you.
Me?
Come here.
All right.
Now, sit down.
Yes?
Fine. Now, that's the tie I just bought. You like it?
Well, frankly, no.
You must be the kind of a man who buys his ties at a department store. Oh, it's like that. Here, drink some water before you pass out.
No, I'm all right.
You've also been following me around. Why?
I've been trying to get my courage up.
To insult my taste in ties?
No, to ask you to help me.
You don't need courage for that. Just money.
Yeah, you're right, of course. Mr. Craig, my name is Homer Dibble.
How do you do?
How do you... I am, or was until last night, an accountant for G.J. Thomas.
The big department store boy?
Yes. Well, I was working on the quarterly audit yesterday, and I'd caught up on my regular work, and I found a minor discrepancy in the accounts.
In whose accounts?
I didn't know. I had only the final balance sheets. I'd have had to check back on the departmental reports to find out who was responsible.
And did you do that?
Oh, it was a question of getting authority, so I reported the discrepancy to G.J. himself.
And?
G.J. was very strange, abrupt. He said he knew about the discrepancy, that he was going to take care of the embezzler himself. And why the devil had I rushed the audit?
He doesn't approve of ambition?
Well, I don't know, but the last thing he said to me was...
Yes?
Dibble, you're fired.
Nice man.
Oh, I'm sure G.J. wasn't himself. Mr. Craig, I like my job at that store. There must be something behind G.J.'s firing me like that. If you'd look into it...
Well, could be. That minor discrepancy you mentioned, how much was it?
$37,241.98.
Obviously an inside job, that 98 cents. I think we'd better go visit Mr. Thomas.
I don't dare. If he knew, I'd spoken to you about it.
He's doing a very dangerous thing. Covering up a theft, taking the law into his own hands, like playing with a loaded gun.
You think it's that serious?
It could be. Suppose we find out. Mr. Dibble was highly concerned. I was highly concerned, too. The situation had all the ingredients of a beautiful mess. I don't admire messes, especially when they involve $37,241. Oh, yes, 98 cents. Business at the Thomas Department Store must be good.
Yeah, it is an impressive house, isn't it?
Yeah. If they played their cards right, they could probably get Grant to move here.
I'm worried.
What about?
Oh, G.J. is likely to be very angry with me. He might fire me.
He did fire you.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think that doorbell took the first time. Maybe not the second time either.
Hello? So
that's an answer, one I don't like. Oh, it's open. That yell came from someplace down that corridor.
Oh, dear. Whatever will G.J. say?
Oh, we'll ask him. First, we've got to find him, though. Door up ahead's ajar. Uh-huh. Leads to the place these doors always lead, the library.
Good heavens. G.J.'s butler's lying down. Looks very peculiar.
Maybe he didn't think of that when he fainted, after he yelled.
Fainted? At what?
Well, it's seeing G.J. Thomas behind the desk here.
I can't...
Lying down, too. But his case is a little more serious. There's a knife in his back.
Oh, dear.
Easy, now don't you start fainting on me. What happened is obvious. We rang, the butler started down the hall, went into the library to check with Thomas, saw the blood, and... Well, what happened to Thomas is obvious, too.
Someone murdered him?
Whoever it was didn't stick a knife into his back because he thought it would improve Thomas's disposition.
What shall we do now?
We could notify the police, but we won't. Come on.
But...
The butler can take care of that when he comes, too. We're going to the store.
Why?
Dollars will get you donuts that murdering Thomas was only half the murderer's job. My car was out front. We went away in a hurry. I couldn't be sure, but if two and two still added up to four, we were getting closer to the killer every block we traveled. Well, G.J. Thomas's pride and joy. There's a night watchman on duty, isn't there, Dibble?
Yes, there is.
Fine. Let's bang on the door. Well, net result, dead silence. Time's passing, Dibble. Would you have a key to the store?
Well, yes, I do.
Even though you were fired?
Well, I forgot to turn it in.
Uh-huh. Okay, open the door.
All right.
Now, where are the files kept?
Second floor, accounting department.
Lead the way.
Yes, Mr. Craig.
Place doesn't look right. No women battling happily over marked-down girdles.
Up these stairs, Mr. Craig.
No sight or sound of the night watchman yet. They could be happier if I could
now,
locate them.
Along this hallway. That door there.
Uh-huh. Now, the light's on and... Now, don't faint, Dibble. There's your night watchman, unconscious, but alive. More bodies lying around in this case than... Hey, Dibble.
Yes?
Smell anything?
I think it's smoke, sir.
Smoke? Where's that door leading?
The inner office.
Inner office. Oh, smoke's a little stale. Somebody built a bonfire in the waste paper basket. Only ashes left.
But what?
Were the ashes before they got that way? Easy, Dibble.
Is it?
Yeah. Those were records, Dibble. The ones with the minor discrepancy in them.
I imagine you're right.
Doesn't take too much thought to see it. Thomas was murdered, the records burnt, no evidence of embezzling left. Dibble, in whose department could that discrepancy have arisen?
Well, in several. Three, anyway.
Tell me about them.
Well, maybe in Mr. Connor's department, that's sales. Or Mr. Wainwright's, he's promotion. Or Miss Welch, head of personnel.
Uh-huh. That's three possibilities for murder, and of course, there's a fourth.
A fourth? Who?
You.
You're joking.
No. Matter of fact, you're the likeliest possibility. You were fired because Thomas had found you'd been stealing money. You killed him and burned the files.
Do you believe that?
Did you kill Thomas and so on?
No.
I always believe my clients, so I'll believe you. The police aren't likely to agree with me, though.
Oh, dear.
Better use stronger language, Dibble. You're in trouble. Once this thing breaks, I won't be able to help you much either. I'll be on the outside. If only... Dibble.
Yes?
How hard is it to get a job here?
Well...
If I'm going to be useful in this thing, I've got to have some kind of standing here at the store. I've got to be here. A job would be a perfect cover.
Well, if you had a letter of recommendation...
I'll have one.
From one of the stockholders, say.
Name one.
Mr. Stuber.
I'll have a letter from Mr. Stuber.
You know him?
You've asked your quarter of questions for tonight, Dibble.
Well, isn't your scheme a bit drastic?
Maybe. But what they do to you for murder is even more drastic. Mr. Dibble blinked his eyes several times and started to turn green. On him, it didn't look good. I dragged him out of the store. The air helped, and by the time I dropped him at his house, he looked comparatively normal. I wouldn't know compared with what. And the next morning, I reported to personnel at the G.J. Thomas department store. After a while, somebody got around to noticing me. It couldn't have been more than a week later that,
Mr. Craig.
Yes.
Come in, please.
Thank you.
I've just been reading this letter of recommendation of yours.
You must be a slow reader.
I beg your pardon?
I spent most of the morning in that anteroom. I didn't care for the furnishings to start with.
Oh, look here.
You're Miss Welch, aren't you?
I am.
Then why don't you stop trying to sound as if you were 50, hopeless, and hideous? That's a nice blush.
Well, you can stop all that. This letter gives you a very nice recommendation.
It should.
What?
Mr. Stuber is very enthusiastic about me.
So I notice. Which means that whatever I personally think of you, I'll have to hire you.
What do you personally think? Oh, you don't have to answer that now.
Thank you.
Save it for after hours.
The question is, where can you serve Thomas best?
Well, it's your question. Go ahead and answer it.
I could put you in lingerie.
Over my dead body? Say, there's a joke there if we want to struggle for it.
We don't. Oh, I know.
I don't like the look in your eye. It's not friendly.
We're starting a demonstration display in the basement today of dishwashers.
Dishwashers? I'm not the domestic type.
Mm-hmm. Women away from home don't look for the domestic type. You'll do, Mr. Craig, is it?
You know it's Mr. Craig. Does it have to be...
Dishwashers? Yes.
Okay, Miss Welch. To the dishwashers. They gave me a few instructions first and then let me loose in the basement with a dishwasher. Neither of us took to the other. But it was all right before the customers came. After that, everybody had trouble. No, madam, it doesn't make that noise all the time. Only when it's hungry. Madam, it's of no interest to me at all that your husband's a vegetarian. This machine washes dishes, not your husband. You want me to demonstrate this machine to you? Okay, lady. Now you take a dish here. Any dish, even one like this. Now you put it in the machine. Now you press the button. And the dishwasher, dishwasher. In the meantime, you can file your nails, hit your baby, spy on a neighbor, or if you're brisk, kill your husband. In short, carry on the ordinary activities of a housewife. And when you're through... find out you needn't bother any longer about that dish. You sweep up the pieces, place them in a convenient can, which can be purchased in the can department, and then you dine out. Good afternoon, madam.
Craig.
Oh, hello, Miss Welch.
I've been watching you work.
You should have told me. I'd have made an extra effort.
Heaven forbid. There's a phone call for you, Craig, in my office.
Thank you.
After you're through, I've something to say to you.
I'm looking forward to it.
Only one thing. Before you go.
Yes?
Did you change the hookup on the machine around any?
A little, here and there.
Didn't our mechanic take care of that?
Sure. But then all the darn machine did was wash dishes. Miss Welch was very pretty, even when she wasn't blushing. She was even prettier when she blushed. But then I decided the red in her face wasn't a blush. I went to take my phone call. Hello?
Mr. Craig?
Yeah?
This is the Samaritan Hospital. A friend of yours, Mr. Dibble, asked to call you.
What's he doing now?
He was struck by a hit-and-run driver this morning.
What's his condition?
He wants to see you as soon as possible.
I'll be over, but...
His condition is fair, Mr. Craig.
I suggest you put a guard in his room.
But we don't do that with accident victims.
What makes you think it was an accident? It took a little more than that, but finally a guard was assigned to make sure that Mr. Dibble's condition wouldn't get worse rapidly.
Finish your phone call, Craig.
Finished.
Only the fact that the letter you brought me is from one of our largest stockholders keeps me from firing you.
Let's be happy it was such a nice letter.
But I'm not going to put you back in selling. An office job would be safer. Let's see. Connor can use a clerk. Wainwright needs a bookkeeper. Have you ever kept books, Craig?
Frequently. But then the library would always get nasty and... Well, I mean, sure.
Then you will report to Mr. Wainwright down the hall, promotion department. And Craig?
Yes?
Working for Mr. Wainwright has certain disadvantages.
It has?
Yes, Mr. Wainwright has a very quick temper when he loses it. And I can easily imagine circumstances under which he might lose it with you.
Well, now, that's definitely unkind.
It's murder.
I went down the hall to the office of the terrible-tempered Mr. Wainwright. I wondered how accurate Miss Welch had been about just how terrible that temper was.
So you're Craig.
I'm Craig.
You don't look like a bookkeeper.
Sorry. Maybe it's because I'm out of practice.
You do double entry, of course.
Oh, sure. All the time.
Indeed. Very well. You'll find your work laid out for you. The desk in the corner over there.
Thanks.
A bookkeeper, hmm?
Only during office hours.
Well, these are office hours. I'll be in my office if you need me. I'd advise you to concentrate on your work, young man.
Yes, sir.
That should give you trouble enough.
I didn't like Mr. Wainwright's last remark. It was so right.
Hello.
Huh? Oh, hello.
You the, new bookkeeper?
Yeah. I've discovered something, though.
What's that?
There's something basically wrong with bookkeeping. The assets always match the liabilities. It can't be coincidence.
Yeah, you're Craig, all right.
I'm Craig, all right.
My name's Connor, head of sales. Craig, it must have seemed a good idea to you.
What must have?
Pretending to be an employee here and working on the suspects from the inside?
Oh, it was a wonderful idea. Didn't work too well, would you say?
Oh, we all know who you are.
Miss Welch? Wainwright?
Yes.
Did I talk in my sleep? No, I haven't slept around here yet.
Miss Welch's receptionist recognized you.
I didn't recognize her.
A friend of hers once hired you.
Too bad. Interesting, anyway, that a couple of suspects pretended not to know me. Miss Welch and Wainwright.
Well...
And the third one is maybe hoping to make that seem important, clearing himself in the process.
All I can say to that is no. But I'd advise you to be careful. Whoever stabbed G.J. and knocked out the night watchman in order to burn the records...
How did you know that the night watchman had been knocked out?
Well, Wainwright told me.
Forgetting that for the moment, had there been any quarrels between Miss Welch and Thomas?
No.
How about Wainwright and Thomas?
Well, Wainwright's got a violent temper. Perhaps I shouldn't say this. I may be doing Wainwright an injustice.
But you'll say it, won't you?
What? Hello, Wainwright.
You're not careful enough about shutting doors behind you. You might have asked me, Craig. Yes, I had a fight with G.J. I threatened to beat his brains out the next time I saw him.
Well, that probably soothed him. Are you telling me this to show how truthful you are so I wouldn't bother considering you as a handyman with a knife?
You...
Watch your temper, Mr. Wainwright. It's notorious. Connor, were you on good terms with Thomas?
Sure. I made him laugh.
Which one of you drives a car?
We all do, including the luscious Welch.
Too bad. It's lunchtime. I get hungry at lunchtime. I'll be back after lunch, though. Anyone want me to bring him a sandwich? Nobody did, which wasn't surprising. I would have had trouble getting a sandwich at the Samaritan Hospital anyway. I haven't got much time, Dibble, but...
It was nice of you to visit me.
Not nice. I'm working. Dibble, could your accident this morning have been a genuine one?
Oh, no. The car came right up on the sidewalk after me.
Okay, next question. How much would it hurt you to be moved?
Well, a bit, perhaps, but why do you ask?
I want to take you back to the store with me.
Is it important?
Yes.
Then it doesn't really matter how much it hurts, does it?
It did hurt, but Dibble didn't whimper. I decided I liked him. I hoped I'd be able to keep him out of trouble. The trouble his late employer, G.J. Thomas, had run into. On the ride over to the store, I coached Dibble. He was horrified. I was asking him to tell a lie. By the time I got through telling him a few things about the methods with which murderers are caught, he was very disillusioned. How's the wheelchair feel?
Only way to take a walk. won't everyone be surprised to see me here?
Happily surprised, except one person.
Who's that?
The murderer. Now, the first stop, Wainwright's office. Now, let's get the door open. And make an entrance.
The devil.
Now, hello, Mr. Wainwright. Meet Mr. Dibble.
I know Dibble. What happened to you, Dibble?
Somebody tried to kill me.
A rabbit like you?
Even rabbits can be dangerous. Mr. Wainwright, would you mind getting hold of Mr. Connor and Miss Welch?
Why?
It might be fun.
I don't think it will be fun.
Well, do it anyway. After all, you know who I really am.
Well, all right.
Mr. Wainwright didn't seem very happy about something or other.
He's not a happy man. Don't worry about it. You remember what I told you to do?
I remember.
Good.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Connor.
Brother, what a binge you must have had.
I'm not hungover. I was run over.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just trying to be light and happy. The rest of our miserable little crew. Darling Miss Welch, stalwart Wainwright. Oh, of course, someone's missing.
Who?
G.J. Thomas, remember him?
Shut up, Connor.
Mr. Wainwright is so blunt, manly.
If nobody minds, I'd like to point out that someone in this room murdered Thomas.
I mind, but what can I do?
Actually, there's no problem. The identity of the killer wasn't hard to establish. But there was a lot of confusion around that central point. It might help to clear it up.
Well, go ahead. Clear it up.
Thanks. Now, one of you three had embezzled some $37,241.
And 98 cents.
Let's not forget the 98 cents. Thomas knew about that, summoned the guilty one to his house in order to confront him or her with his or her guilt.
Is that fact or theory?
Half and half, say. Now, the guilty one promptly proceeded to kill Thomas. Dibble, whose account was short $37,000? Come on, Dibble.
All right. Miss Welch's account.
What?
You said something, Miss Welch?
What? statement's ridiculous.
That won't stop him from making it in front of a jury.
It'll be his word against mine. We all know the records themselves were destroyed.
Still, a jury might believe Mr. Dibble. What do you think, Wainwright?
I think Dibble's crazy.
And you, Mr. Connor?
I never cared for the luscious Welch, Craig. So efficient. I'm glad the records showed her to be the embezzler.
But they didn't.
What?
Well, what are you...
They were burned before Dibble got to them.
Then how does he know she was the one?
He doesn't.
This isn't very funny.
It isn't funny at all. Wainwright, did you tell Connor the night watchman had been knocked unconscious when the records were burned?
No, I didn't know that myself.
So, Connor, the only way you could have known was because you yourself knocked him out and burned the records, which showed you to be an embezzler.
Maybe they did, but they were phony. That's why I had to burn them. With Thomas dead, I knew I'd be suspected of his murder, even though I wasn't an embezzler.
A little weak, Connor.
Mr. Craig.
Yes?
This isn't very pleasant. Is it all right if I leave now?
Sure.
Thanks.
Clever woman, Miss Welch.
Forget her. What I want to know is why
Let's
Connor...
Let's not forget, Miss Welch.
What are you driving at, Craig?
You're all overlooking one small fact.
Which is?
G.J. Thomas was stabbed in the back.
In the back? That means...
It means that Wainwright, who threatened to beat Thomas's brains out, has to be innocent of Thomas's murder.
Of course. Unless there were signs of a struggle.
No signs of struggle.
Then G.J. would never have let Wainwright get behind him.
True.
We already know I didn't stab G.J. Craig, will you stop sidling around?
Keep your voice at normal level and keep talking.
But where does G.J.'s being stabbed leave me?
Equally innocent. The records show...
They were false.
...that you were an embezzler. He'd summon you to his house to confront you with your supposed guilt. Would he have...
Let me get behind him? Of course not.
But there's someone who did get behind him. Someone who's behind this door.
I'm sorry to disturb your aim. Yeah, I'll take that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Someone who got behind G.J. Thomas. Someone he didn't suspect and hadn't fought with. Who could it be but...
Miss Welch.
The police came and took her away. She'd stopped looking luscious by that time. She was a killer, trapped. And killers are never luscious or lovely or anything else but deadly.
Miss Welch had embezzled the money, falsified the records, and... It was very clever of you to detect her, Mr. Craig.
Thanks.
Oh, I have your check here.
Oh, forget it.
What?
You're getting your job back at the store, but even so, you can't afford me. Besides, I make it a rule never to get paid twice for the same job.
But you haven't...
I will be. Don't forget that Thomas Department Store owed me one day's salary for I did demonstrate the dishwasher, but, never mind what it owes me the salary for. Just make sure they pay it.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Death's Bargain Basement, was written by Louis Vittes. Next week, it's the strange story of Midsummer Lunacy, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
In next week's story, Midsummer Lunacy, a fortune-hunting manicurist bites her nails down to the cuticles, and the man of her schemes loses his mind easier than he loses his heart. Good night, folks. See you next week.
The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Arthur Jacobson. Also heard were Templeton Fox, Hilary Hall, Rye Billsbury, Olan Soule, and John Stevenson. Eddie King speaking.
And delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum is so handy. Just slip a package into your purse or pocket and you've got refreshment right at your fingertips. Chew Wrigley's Spearmint while you're working. Enjoy this refreshing treat along with your favorite summer sports. Wrigley's Spearmint Gum is always enjoyable. and you can chew it without even taking time out. Get a few packages of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Columbia All Risk Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Shane bombing matter. Expense account item one, $14.75. Train fare and incidentals between Hartford and New York City, after I received from you the necessary information concerning the late David Shane. I arrived in New York at 3:30 in the afternoon and went directly to the 3rd Precinct Station, where I contacted Lieutenant Will Stevens of Homicide.
Just sit down, Johnny.
Oh, thanks, Will.
Been a long time.
Yeah, it has. Will, I'm investigating the David Shane killing.
Well, I'll give you all the help I can.
Well, I'd appreciate it. I understand you're holding the brother.
Yeah. We talked to Mrs. Shane. She told us Charles sent the box. Says she heard David say so before he opened it.
Brothers weren't living together?
No, Charles Shane's been in California. He arrived here by plane this morning. We picked him up.
What does he say about it?
He swears he didn't do it.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know. As near as we can find out, the brothers were very close.
Oh, so were Cain and Abel.
Yeah. But there doesn't seem to be any motive in this case. At least we can't find any. I thought for a while Charles was going to give us a lead, but just before we had him brought up for questioning, his lawyer showed up.
With a writ?
No. No, just said he was representing Charles and wanted to talk to him. He was with him for about a half hour, and after he left, Charles wouldn't open his mouth.
My report on David Shane says he worked at Bishop and Harding.
That's right. Factory foreman. I knew him. He's a nice guy. Took a lot of interest in union affairs, and everybody seemed to like him.
And you can't find any motive for the brother to send him a bomb?
Not yet.
Can I talk to Charles?
Sure. But you're not going to get anything out of him.
Stevens put in a call and made arrangements for me to interview Charles Shane. Expense account item two, $1.35. Cab fare to the city jail, where I was taken in to see Charles Shane in his cell. Mr. Shane?
Yeah?
Mind if I sit down?
No.
Thanks. My name is Dollar. I represent the Columbia All Risk Insurance Company.
Are you kidding?
I'm investigating your brother's death.
Oh.
Your mother and sister are also insured with Columbia.
How are they?
Well, I haven't seen them, but the last report was they were doing all right. Mr. Shane.
I didn't send him that bomb.
Any idea who did?
No.
You're in a pretty tough spot.
Okay.
The package the bomb was in...
came from California, okay.
How long have you been in California, Mr. Shane?
About 8 months.
Doing what?
Working.
Doing what?
Shipyard. Now look, Mr. Dollar, the police have asked me all kinds of questions. Same ones you're asking me. I've given them the same answers. They've probably got them all written down on a piece of paper. So why don't you save yourself a lot of trouble and just go take a look at the paper?
Just a couple more questions.
Okay. You've got a cigarette.
Oh, sure. If you had a job in California, why did you come back to New York?
Because I quit my job.
Why?
Because I didn't like it. Now, you've had your couple of questions, Mr. Dollar.
Okay. You didn't send the bomb?
No, I didn't send the bomb. Now, will you lay off, please?
Okay. Guard! I'm going to see your mother and sister. Any message?
No.
I can't help wondering.
What?
How your brother knew the package was from you.
Goodbye, Mr. Dollar.
Kind of foolish for a guy to send someone a bomb in a package that could be so easily identified.
I said goodbye, Mr. Dollar, and thanks for the cigarette.
Sure. Expense account item three. $1.65. Cab fare to the hospital, where I was allowed to interview Mrs. Shane. She was in her late 50s, a small, frail woman, lying in the clean, white hospital bed and looking up at me with hurt-filled eyes.
You only have a few minutes.
Okay.
Mrs. Shane, this is Mr. Dollar. He'd like to speak to you.
Hello, Mrs. Shane.
Are you another policeman?
No, ma'am. I'm an insurance investigator.
Oh. I was hoping you could tell me something about my son, Charles.
I just left Charles, Mrs. Shane.
Did you? How is he?
Oh, he's fine.
I made such a terrible mistake.
How's that?
Telling the police Charles sent the package.
You don't think he did?
Of course he didn't. Mr. Dollar, I don't know you, but please, if you're investigating this terrible thing, please, please do something for Charles. He didn't do it. He loved his brother. They were so close. He wouldn't ever do anything as terrible as this.
I'll do everything I can, Mrs. Shane.
David could have been wrong. He must have been.
Wrong about what?
About Charles sending the package.
Why did he think Charles sent him the package?
We were in the kitchen. I was fixing dinner. This package had arrived that afternoon at the factory. It was just addressed to David.
Was it addressed in Charles' handwriting?
I don't know. But when David came home, he said it was from Charles. I didn't know what I was saying when I told that to the police. I was so stunned. Mr. Dollar, he didn't send that package. Please, Mr. Dollar, you must do something to help him.
All right, Mrs. Shane. I'm sure Mr. Dollar will do everything he can. Now, you'll have to rest.
You will help, won't you, Mr. Dollar?
I'll do everything I can, Mrs. Shane.
Your time's up, Mr. Dollar.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Shane.
Oh, all right. Goodbye, Mr. Dollar. Please help him.
Goodbye, Mrs. Shane. Is she going to be all right?
Oh, she'll be fine. She wasn't hurt badly. Minor cuts and burns, shock.
Where's her daughter, Miss Mary Shane?
3 doors down, but she's a little worse off.
Can I see her?
Yes. Lieutenant Stevens asked the doctor to give you all the cooperation possible. But you can only stay a few minutes, and she's under sedation. She may not be able to say much.
Sure.
Only a few minutes. Miss Shane? Miss Shane, this is Mr. Dollar. He'd like to speak with you.
Who?
Johnny Dollar, Miss Shane. I'm investigating your brother's death.
Oh. Yes, Mr. Dollar. I'm a little sleepy. They gave me something to make me sleep, and things don't make much sense. I'm sorry.
I just saw your brother Charles.
He didn't do it. He wouldn't have any reason to.
Well, can you tell me anything that might help?
He was helping David. He wouldn't try to kill him. He was helping him.
Helping him?
What?
You said he was helping David.
Oh, yes. Charles knows who sent the bomb, but he didn't send it.
He knows who sent it?
He knows. David's been making speeches against the Workers' Protective Association.
The Workers' Protective Association? Miss Shane. You said something about the Workers' Protective Association.
Been making speeches against them. Charles has been helping in California. Didn't send it. He knows who did.
What has Charles been doing in California, Miss Shane?
Charles knows who sent the bomb. He knows. He's keeping quiet to protect us, but he knows.
Miss Shane, did David tell anyone Charles was helping him in California?
Tell anyone? There was a man named Wagner who called all the time.
Wagner?
Yes, mm-hmm. Wagner.
call all the time.
Did he work at the factory?
No, I think he was a lawyer.
A lawyer?
Yes. I can't think.
Please, Mr. Dollar.
Just one more question, Nurse. It's very important. Miss Shane, did David tell anyone at the factory that Charles was working with him in California?
At the factory?
Yes. Did he tell anyone about Charles in California?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Mr. Dollar, I'll have to call the doctor.
Look, this may mean a man's life. Who did David tell, Miss Shane?
Man, I wish I could get things straight.
Who did he tell at the factory?
Pryor. Sometimes after work, Mom used to fix dinner for him and David.
Pryor?
Yes. Pryor. Ralph Pryor was a close friend of David's. David. David.
Now, please, Mr. Dollar.
Okay. I left the hospital and walked out in the street. One of those sidewalk photographers snapped my picture and handed me a card in case I wanted to send him 2 bits for the print. I threw the card away and hailed another cab. Expense account item 4, $2.65. Cab fare to the Bishop and Harding factory where David had worked. I identified myself to the superintendent. He took me down and introduced me to the new foreman of the shop, who pointed out Ralph Pryor at a turret lathe. Mr. Pryor. Yeah? My name is Johnny Dollar.
Okay, so what?
Oh, you're a friendly little fella, aren't you?
Look, what do you want? I got a lot of work to turn out, and I ain't got no time for stupid conversation.
I understand David Shane was a good friend of yours.
Yeah. What do you want to know for?
I'm investigating his death.
All right, he was a good friend. Now, what else do you want to know?
How long have you worked here?
Oh, about 6 years.
When was the last time you saw David?
Yesterday. I said goodbye to him when he left work.
You don't seem very unhappy.
You got any more questions?
Yeah. How does the mail come in here?
From the mail room.
Who brings it in?
Nobody special. The foreman usually sends someone after.
How do I find the mail room?
Up the hall at the head of the stairs. Thanks.
I went up and talked to the mailroom clerk, and he was a little more help. There had been a package for David. He remembered it because it was so heavy. He told me that he'd sent it down along with some other mail, but he couldn't remember who'd picked it up. I was starting to get a hunch, so I got to a phone and put in a call to Lieutenant Stevens.
How you doing?
Pretty fair. You know, I don't think the brother sent the bomb.
I don't either. The lab says the bomb was dynamite, highest grade. I don't see how it could have come through the mails all the way from California without the caps blowing the whole thing up.
Huh. Do me a favor.
If I can.
Pick up a Ralph Pryor. Works at the factory.
Any charge?
Just pick him up for questioning. He was supposed to be one of David Shane's closest friends. Pick him up and hold him as long as you can.
You, got something?
Maybe. Friends, you know, Wrigley's Spearmint Gum is a delicious treat that millions enjoy all year round. It's good to chew almost any time and any place. In warm weather, you'll enjoy especially the refreshment that Wrigley's Spearmint Gum gives you. When your mouth feels hot and dry, or when you're feeling warm and tired, chewing Wrigley's Spearmint gives you a pleasant little lift. It cools your mouth, moistens your throat, and refreshes your taste. Besides, chewing on a good smooth piece of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum seems to add enjoyment to whatever else you're doing. So enjoy it at home
at work, wherever you are. And remember, Wrigley's Spearmint Gum is a swell treat to take along on picnics. Get plenty for everybody. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. And now, with our star, John Lund, we bring you the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. After calling Lieutenant Stevens, I left the factory and hung around outside for about 15 minutes till I spotted a squad car pull up and two of New York's finest go into the building to pick up Ralph Fryer. Expense account item 5, $2.75. Cab fare from the Bishop and Harding factory to the 3rd Precinct Police Station.
Boys just brought Pryor in. I got him downstairs. Would you mind letting me in on this?
Well, it's a long shot. I found out what Charles Shane was doing in California.
Well, we know that. He worked in the shipyard.
Yeah, but he was also doing some undercover work.
Undercover work?
His sister told me he was helping David get some evidence on something called the Workers' Protective Association. Know anything about it?
Yeah, had a lot of trouble with them. King-size extortion. They muscle in on the local union and guarantee the workers protection.
Protection from what?
From nothing. But if they don't pay up, they get their heads split. We've even had a couple of killings, but we've never been able to pin them on anyone. The FBI's been working on it for over a year. They're operating all over the country.
I'll bet my expense account that they sent the bomb.
Well, you think Pryor's mixed up in it?
Well, the sister told me Pryor knew what Charles was doing in California. David told him.
You don't think Pryor's going to admit anything, do you?
I doubt it. But I'm interested in seeing who comes to bail him out. The sister also told me David got a number of calls from a lawyer named Wagner.
Well, the lawyer who came to see Charles this morning was named Wagner. Yeah, here it is. John Wagner.
Yeah, that was the hunch. Now, this is the way it figures to me. Charles was in California working with David here to get evidence on a racket. You told me he shut up like a clam when this lawyer got through with him.
Yeah, that's right. Acted frightened.
And why not? If Wagner's mixed up in the racket, he simply tells Charles if he opens his mouth, the Shane family will get another bomb. Or get in the way of a truck or something.
Oh, you gotta have more than that.
Look, I admit it. I'm only guessing. Now, Pryor knew what Charles was doing in California. If he's in the association, he tells him, and they get set to kill off David and at the same time frame the brother for the killing.
Okay. Now suppose you tell me how they do it.
Well, I'm just guessing again, but I think the bomb was sent from the factory. And in order to get hold of that package, the man who planted the bomb would have to be working in David's shop.
Is that where Pryor works?
He sure does.
Excuse me. Stevens. Yeah? He is? Okay. Well...
What?
The lawyer.
Wagner?
Yeah. He's out front. Wants to see his client, Ralph Pryor.
I left Stevens and went out front where I spotted the lawyer, Wagner. He was small, dressed neatly in a Homburg blue suit, and spats. I made sure he was the man I wanted, and I went out front to wait. About a half an hour later, he finally came out and grabbed a cab. Expense account item 6, $3.25. One more cab to tail Wagner. He led me to a waterfront dive on Canal Street. I watched him go in, then I followed.
Something for you, Mac?
No, just looking.
Anything special?
A man just came in here.
He did?
Short. Blue suit and spats.
Spats?
And a Homburg.
Better have a good stiff one.
You didn't see him?
Oh, sure. The short, blue suit, spats, Homburg.
Yeah.
Leading an elephant.
You know something? I'm not amused.
You know something? Neither was the elephant.
Where does that back door lead to?
To the back door. Let's take a walk back there, Mr. Dollar.
You know who I am?
Sure. You want to see Mr. Wagner, don't you? Isn't that right?
That's right.
Through that back door, he's expecting you.
If you don't mind, I'll make a call first.
Ah, but I do mind. I'm sorry.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but
I'm going to make it anyway.
No, you're going back to see Mr. Wagner. You know why?
Because you got a gun in that pocket?
That's a pretty good reason, Dollar.
Yes, it is. Well, let's go see Mr. Wagner. The man with a gun in his coat pocket showed me the way to the back door. We went through into a hall that led to some stairs that led to another door. Behind the second door was an office, and behind the desk was the lawyer, John Wagner.
Come in, Mr. Dollar. Come in. Have a chair.
No, thanks.
Didn't you hear what he said? Sit down.
Now, Mr. Dollar, you realize, of course, that you're in pretty serious trouble.
Is that right?
Oh, yes, indeed.
How do you know who I am?
From your photograph. You had to be a policeman, a private detective, some sort of an investigator. Turned out you're a freelance insurance investigator working for Columbia All Risk.
You learned that from my photograph?
We have a very efficient organization. When we heard you had visited the Shanes in the hospital, we had your picture taken.
The sidewalk photographer.
You have a good memory. We turned the photo over to the qualified members of the organization, and they in turn gave us a very thorough report.
And now what?
It's obvious, isn't it? Al here will take you out to the car and drive you 5 or 10 miles down the river.
You mind clearing up a few points first?
If they're not too time-consuming, I have an appointment.
Pryor put the bomb in the package?
Yes.
He knew the package was coming and intercepted it before David got it, removed the contents, loaded in the bomb, and gave it to Dave.
Absolutely correct, Mr. Dollar.
Weren't you worried he might open it in the factory?
We knew he wouldn't open it until he got home. You see, he believed there was important information concerning my organization in the package.
From his brother?
Of course. Pryor notified us what his brother was doing, and our people in California, in turn, notified us when to expect the package. Simple?
Charming. Nothing like a delightful explosion.
I'm sorry the women were present.
Oh, sure. You cried yourself to sleep.
I'm afraid you have to be going, Mr. Dollar. Al.
Come on, Mr. Dollar.
I'm sorry we couldn't talk further, but if you understand.
Oh, don't think anything of it. And I'm sure you won't.
Out the way you came in.
Wait a minute.
Hold it.
That's trouble out front.
Probably just the police.
They didn't know you were coming. You didn't call.
If you got Pryor released and told him to meet you here, I'm afraid Lieutenant Stevens is right behind him.
Get him out of here, fast.
You heard him. Move.
Al gave me a shove through the door. We turned and headed for the back. Just then, Lieutenant Stevens and two uniformed cops came in the hall with Ralph Pryor in front of them. Al took his gun out of my back and turned to face the trouble.
Drop it! Look out!
I tried to take it away from him.
Jim, take Pryor out to the car. Where's Wagner?
In here. The window. There he goes.
Wagner, stop!
No, don't shoot. I can catch him. I'd love it.
Yeah, are you all right?
Just skinned my knee. But Wagner's out cold.
Oh, you idiot.
Why?
He might have had a gun.
Huh?
He could have turned around and blown your head off.
Hey. I never thought of that. Well, just proves what I've always said. You gotta be crazy to be a hero. The whole thing tied together something like this. Wagner was the head of the Workers' Protective Association. Pryor was one of the boys. When David Shane told Pryor his brother was in California collecting evidence that would stop the organization, Pryor reported to Wagner, and Wagner ordered him to intercept the evidence Charles was sending from California and get rid of David. Wagner sprung Pryor, as we thought he would, and Stevens trailed him to Wagner just in time to save my hide. Expense account item 7, $22. Dinner with Lieutenant Stevens in grateful appreciation. Item 8, $32.50 for a new pair of slacks and minor first aid for my skinned knee. Expense account items 9 and 10, $42.80. Hotel bill, train fare, and incidentals back to Hartford the next day. Expense account total, $123.70. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Remember, friends, wherever you are, whatever you do, enjoy chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. That lively, full-bodied Wrigley Spearmint flavor is really refreshing. It cools your mouth, moistens your throat, helps keep you feeling fresh and comfortable. The smooth, pleasant chewing helps keep you feeling relaxed, too. So you naturally feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. Remember, too, Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum is a refreshing treat you can enjoy almost any time and any place. Just slip a stick into your mouth whenever you want it. Do as millions do. Keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy and enjoy it often, every day. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brought to you by Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, stars John Lund in the title role and was written by Blake Edwards with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in tonight's cast were Junius Matthews, Frank Nelson, Clayton Post, Virginia Gregg, Mary Lansing, Sammy Hill, and Jim Nusser. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's story of Johnny Dollar and that you're enjoying delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. This is Charles Ryan inviting you to join us again next week at the same time when, from Hollywood, John Lund returns as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another Hour of Crime. And between now and then, you can find past episodes, more from Barry Craig, Johnny Dollar, and a variety of other types of shows, all at RelicRadio.com. There's also a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.